We left off in the last year. We were talking a little bit about the Gemara Maseches Ksubos in the first parak, about the institution of Ger Katan. So we said that although the Gemara makes it sound like Ger Katan is such a milsa, the Peshitta, the Gemara even asks Peshitta, it's far from Pashut for us, and we really had a major machlekes in the Rishonim, just how the mechanics of Ger Katan work. Although the Gemara does seem to connect it to Zachlanim Shalbafanov, which in fact some Rishonim do say, some Rishonim take the Gemara Kapshuta that's based on Zachlanim Shalbafanov. It's assuming that Zechiah works for Katan Midaraisa. That was one approach in Rishonim. Then we had Rashi and Shach claims that this Rashi, that it's not the regular Zechiah, but it's the Zechiah Derech Beis Din, Derech Apotropos, but it's also within the parish of Zechiah. Then we had a whole different approach. That was a Targum of Sanhedrin that said that Ger Katan doesn't even really work through Zechiah. Ger Katan works through, because Naaseh Geiris Pagufa Shekatan, the Katan himself is being put into the mikvah, so that's good enough. Why does the Gemara say Zach Shalom Zolofanev? So that was social reasons. That was just to explain why we're doing this in the first place. But in terms of the halachic technicalities, it really works not having to do with the parasha of Zechiah. No matter how you slice it, at the end of the day, the Gemara says Igdilichom Limchos, that the Katan does have the right to back out when he turns, either he or she turns Bar Bas Mitzvah. Right before that point, they have a right to back out. How that works, we spoke a little bit about that in the past as well. When we talk about the Ger Katan, so especially according to those Rishonim, will say that Zach Ladam Shabbafanov is mamash the ABCs, it's mamash the mechanics of the sugya. So then it's obvious that the whole din of Ger Katan will only be true even when it's a zchus for the child, which raises a very, very serious question. Perhaps one of the most controversial questions in Ger Katan, as it plays out today, is how exactly do you define it being a zchus on behalf of the Katan? Now, we all know, Baruch Hashem, Baruch L'Kenesh, L'Chvaydov, L'Lan R'Tayim, and also Taras Hemes, we are so excited and so happy to be Jews and to be Shema Tera Mitzvahs. But the question becomes, what if you have an individual who will become, in theory, Jewish, but they will not become Shema Tera Mitzvahs, with any stretch of the imagination? Can we turn around and say, well, that's okay, that's also considered to be a zechus, and we can invoke the principle of Zoch Darash L'Bafanov? Just objectively being Jewish is just a great thing. Whether you're a Mechal Shabbos or not, that's a side problem. I mean, it's a big side problem, but it's a tangential problem. But fundamentally, in terms of measuring the chus, it's still called the chus. But do I say, no, wait a second. Gemara's example of being a chus means to become a Shema Tera Mitzvah as chus, to make you into a Mechal Shabbos, to make you into an Eichel Terefes. You would have been better off if you would have remained a non-Jew. That's a very, very serious question. This child comes up all the time. When you have, let's say, you have a not yet from couple, wants to invoke the principles of Ger Katan, they want to adopt a non-Jewish child, and they want to come to bring the child to the rabbi, and they want the rabbanim to convert this child based on the principle of Ger Katan. So we look at this family, we say, you know, anything's possible, but the odds of this kid becoming Shema Tera Mitzvah are very unlikely. The family lives in the middle of that's a good place, Wyoming, okay? They're not necessarily signing him up for the out-of-town yeshiva program yet. And the family doesn't live 400 miles away from the closest Orthodox community. So what are the odds that this kid's going to ever really become Shema Tera Mitzvah? The parents, Bechlal, have no shaykes to anything, but they want the kid to be Jewish. So Ramesh has a tshuva about this, where he raises this basic question, can you really call that as chosana? So Ramesh goes back and forth and back and forth, and he's night the lahokal on this. Ramesh writes the end of the tshuva that he thinks that maybe you could argue that it is still considered to be as chosana. It's not convincing, he writes, it's a tia, that's probably is considered to be as chosana. Another poskim, we weren't so sure that that's true. We, most of the responsible about the dinim today, do not want to rely on that. We don't want to just convert kids just like that for two reasons. First of all, we're not at all sure that it's really considered to be a zchus. And even if technically it is a zchus, it's almost a social question that, what are you doing this to the person for? Is this right? But on the chavero, is this right to take a non-Jewish child who is not bound by anything short of the Shem Mitzvah Noach and turning him into a balaveir for life? Is that really a correct moral thing, ethical thing to do? So we have serious reservations of being tried to megayer these types of situations. On the other hand, sometimes you have a situation where the parents are not absolutely 100%, real true blue Shema Tera Mitzvahs. You have sometimes little somewhere in the middle kind of situation. So what they didn't try to do, some of the guidelines were given by the Rav years ago, to try to at least get a sense that the family's on board. That means at least they're going to live in a Jewish community, an Orthodox Jewish community. They're going to live within walking distance of an Orthodox shul. The parents commit that they're going to send the kids to at least the Yeshiva day school. So when you have certain signs that then the kid has a fighting chance to become from, so then the parents are willing to keep a kosher home. Again, they're making steps forward, so then maybe one can argue that's already a tipped balance in the favor of being as chus. Again, this is a very, very dachistic line that, Beis Din has to really, really assess whether they're comfortable in saying that this is reached the point we convert the Shah based on based on Zohar.
In the
Shukra
Bus, did you ever test one idea of maybe like a couple where the guy or the girl, whatever, is Jewish and the other one's not, and they're not as from, but she wants to convert, so Lozak have fun of, then the guy has to like take classes or take a class.
Well, we're talking about the Katan still.
No, in the Katan and Shukra, does it touch upon that?
We're going to talk about that afterwards. We're going to talk about Geras to Shemishas. We saved some of the best for last. So we'll see what the worst for last. We'll see what we have to say about that. Okay. Yeah.
In terms of his doc line, is there like an RCA or like a Nation of America?
Yeah, some of the protocol, that some of the conditions that what I alluded to, that the they have to be living within in a fairly, you know, within an Orthodox Jewish community. They have to at least commit it to send the kid to Yeshiva Day School. And you know, those are some of the bare bone minimums. Okay, you know, I go look at the absolute. You know, I'm not sure how much each particular prat is spelled out in stone, but those are pretty much the guidelines. Okay, I've just been living with the Jewish community, and they have nothing to do with the Jewish community. It has to be realistic. They can be part of the Orthodox Jewish community. Okay, there is another type of. Another issue, before I get to the other, another important issue that comes up in terms of the Gekotan, we mentioned that Higdili Chalum Limchos. And again, different lomdas in the Rishonim, why exactly that works. There is a big question in the Poskim, just what do those words mean, Higdili Chalum Limchos? Is this almost a positive or a negative? Namely, does the child have the right to be formally be Moicha? But as long as the child hasn't been Moicha, so then the child remains being from. Perhaps that remains being Jewish, even though he wasn't even given the choice to be Moicha. Let's say he doesn't even know that he was adopted. He doesn't even know that he was a Gekot in the first place. So is that also okay? Some Poskim had that idea. Maybe it was completely Chalum Limchais. Chol's Mavdin, not Moicha. So everything is okay. And then nobody ever tells him about it. So they're also considered to be Jewish. And others raise the question, wait a second, that's not so simple. Especially according to that Tyson Sanhedrin that we quoted last time, that Yilichal Mimchos, the reason why that's true is because even the Gekotlan requires a Kabbalah Samitzvahs, and the Kabbalah Samitzvahs is when he continues to be from later in life. So one can argue that you can only call that a Kabbalah Samitzvahs if he realizes that he's doing a Kabbalah Samitzvahs. So the day of his Bar Mitzvah, we say to him, listen, here's your choice. You want to put on tefillin or not? And he says, yeah, I want to come put on tefillin, but I want to come down to Minyan, I want to keep kosher. So that's a Kabbalah Samitzvahs. If he doesn't find out about it, so then maybe that's not a formal Kabbalah Samitzvahs. That's a big, big deal in the Poskim, whether he needs a formal consent or whether the absence of a Machor is also good enough. So this shayla has become much less of a relevant shayla only because the whole approach in society towards adoption has changed. So years ago, so adoption was top secret. So they wouldn't tell the child either. So the child could theoretically be 30, could be 55 and not know yet that he was adopted. So the parents didn't want to tell him. So then this obviously would raise a serious question in terms of the gayers. So the way the world works today is that the children are told at a fairly young age that they're adopted already. So they're ready. Kid already knows that he's an effective Ger Katan. So that at the age of Bar Mitzvah, it's very easy to give him that quote-unquote option to back out. We hope and pray that he won't take it. When we speak about Ger Katan, so we've been talking about, I guess, what's called standard Ger Katan, when the child was a little baby and we converted him. But there's another type of potential Ger Katan out there, which we alluded to a little bit, and that's the issue of Buberish and Esgaira. We mentioned it in passing in the previous sugya. Now we'll discuss it just a little bit more in terms of Gekotan problems. The Gemara says in Yevamos that if you have a woman who is pregnant, non-Jewish woman, and she converts, she goes to the mikvah, so benoyim tzarech tevilas, and there's no need to convert the child. So we had a big machlekes in the Gemara, and then they were showing them just the mechanics of how that works. So one day in the Gemara was based on Uber Yerech Imo, but just as the mother converts, her stomach converts, her legs convert, her arms convert, her neck convert, all the parts of her body converts, so the fetus is considered to be part of her body, so that also converts as part of the gerus of the mother. Then the Gemara put in another opinion, that the uber's lav yerech imo, it's considered to be a separate entity from the mother. How does it convert? Well, it went under the water. So it had a tefillah b'fnei atzma, and then the chatzitz issue, and the Gemara deals with it, not for now. So there's a conceptual machlokes here, between 2 days and the Gemara, as to, is this ultimately part of the gerus of the mother? Is it really one gerus taking place, or is it really two independent gerus taking place? We spoke about this about the Beis Din, where the Beis Din has to know that she's pregnant, right? I think we spoke about this. So comes the Avdi Meluim in Chuvas, besides, but he wrote a lot of different things, but this was in the beginning, the beginning of Avdi Meluim. So he writes that there's a conceptual machlokes here, which could potentially have a very serious ramification of the halacha. Everyone agrees this kid who's going to be born is going to be Jewish. The question becomes, is he a Ger Katan or is he not a Ger Katan? So if you hold that Uber Yerachimos was part of the mother's Geirus, so the mother supplied the Das Geirus, so we didn't have to go down the track of Ger Kraton. So then there is no independent Geirus, it's part of the mother's Geirus. But Ger Godol, there's no din of Yechol Mimchos. You can't 20 years later back out from a Geirus. So imagine, said the Abdul Meluim, imagine if, he doesn't say this exactly, but I'm going to put these words into his mouth. Imagine if, here the mother converted with the baby, and then 15 years later, her kidney raises an objection and says, the kidney says he doesn't want to be Jewish anymore. So we would laugh at the kidney. That's what the Abdul Meluim says. We laugh at the baby, and the baby says, I don't want to be Jewish. The baby converted his father, mother's, yeah, it's the third leg in the mother's body. So the father, baby's going to be Meluim. It doesn't make any sense. But if you hold that Uba Laviachima, that this is really a separate independent Geirus, so how did this Geirus work? It must have worked through the vehicle of Ger Kraton. Well, it's almost a different color. It works through the vehicle of Ger Kraton, so that Higdilichal Mimchos should kick in. That's Chatzatah, Nafkaminah, very, very serious Nafkamin Ludina. There are a lot of these situations that arise when you have Mubarish in his Geirah. 13 years later, the kid doesn't want to be from. They're not interested. So can he back out or not? So the Avnuim says, let's make it to Dina. We're not sure who's right. We're not sure which Lashon of the Gemara is correct. It's a pretty heavy, heavy-duty question. This parasha of Nuberish and his Gaira, whether it's part of Ger Kraton, not part of Ger Kraton, there's a lot of lumpus to it.
But Yerachim is still the child develops an independent dot. The kidneys don't develop, legs and their own mind.
So it doesn't matter. It was already included in the mother's Gaira. It's already a full-fledged Jew. He came back in. There's another very serious issue that comes up with the potential, very, very serious ramifications for Zman Hazeh, based on the Sugi Mubarish and his Geira. Just how related is this to some of the Klum of Geiras that we've been talking about? The Gemara in Maseches Yevamos is working with a fundamental premise. The baseline of the whole Sugi is that this kid has to convert. Mubarish and his Geira, so this kid has to undergo a Geiras. How does he undergo a Geiras? Either through the Geiras of the mother or through the Geiras of an independent Geiras. But the starting point is, unless we could label this as somehow Tefillah's Geirus, either as father, mother, or separate, this fetus, this developing child, needs a Geirus. This developing child is not really Jewish. And we have to stop and ask ourselves, why is that so? Why did Chazal work with that baseline? If you would have asked me, I would have said, no, hold the phone. This kid doesn't need a Geirus altogether. You know why? Because this kid is born to who? Born to a Jewish mother. By the time this baby comes out, the mother's already Jewish. So the Mishnah says in Kedushin that if your mother's Jewish, then you're Jewish. So why does the Gemara assuming that this kid is a goy until proven otherwise, until we figure out some kind of a finagle, some kind of lumda shavart, either we go down the root of Rabbi Yachimo or through the root of independent tefillah with a Ger Kraton, why do we have to go down any route? Why don't we just say the kid's Jewish because his mother's Jewish? So if I was just reading this Gemara, I would say, oh, that this kid's mother is not really Jewish. What does that mean? Of course the mother's Jewish. At the time that she gives birth to him, she's Jewish. But at the time that she conceived him, she wasn't Jewish. So the Gemara seems to be saying some interesting piece of, in the days of Chazal, almost trivial piece of information, that, well, the definition of a mother doesn't really depend on which body the person comes out of. That's not really what determines motherhood. That's not what determines Yahadus. What really determines is what was the status of the mother at the time of conception. So in the days of Chazal, so that was a very lumdisha question, whether it's conception or birth, didn't have too much relevance to halacha l'maisa. Of course, today the whole world is different because not necessarily every conception mother is necessarily the same as the birth mother. So you can have in different directions. You can take eggs from a goy and put it into a Jew. Take eggs from a Jew, put it into a goy. So who is the mother of this child? Big nafkamin ladina. You're going to have these gerush shalos. You're going to have these shalos out there. Does such a child have to convert or not? So, from the simple reading of this Gemara, it sounds like you follow the conception mother. From the fact that the Gemara needed to come onto a Geirus, that sounds like that Lule the Geirus, conception would have been the Keveya. So therefore, an Goyish egg, even though its birth mother is Jewish, may need a Geirus. A Jewish egg, even though the birth mother is a Goya, may not need a Geirus. It's a pretty loaded question, Bizman Hazet. There are different opinions that talk about this. Ramosha writes in one of his tshuvas that it's hard to be machri on the shaila. It's hard for us to say with certainty who's what over here. You have a right from here, right from there. There's no ironclad right from the Gemara. So maybe we have to be chashish for both. Maybe we have to be concerned that if either the egg or the birth mother is not Jewish, maybe we're going to insist on a Geirus L'chumra in both of these cases. So yesh v'yesh, different opinions than contemporary poskim, just how much credibility we put on this raya or not. One of the other fascinating rayas for the Shaila, and we know the Medrash, the raya about Dina and Shimon, what? No, there's a difference. That's the raya with the That's what the unofficial termination of the story. The raya with Dina? No. Then the Medrash says that Yosef and Dina flipped babies, right? That Dina was really conceived by Rachel and Yosef was really conceived by Leah, and then they flipped. Mm-hmm. So that explains, the Medrash says, that's why Shimon was allowed to marry Dina, because they weren't really a brother and sister from the same mother. Because, let's just think backwards. Mm-hmm. Even though they were born from the same mother, but they were conceived from different mothers. So some say, Zem Fendah, that the mother in Halacha is the conception mother. Possibly Shabbos Sakura is based on that, I'm not sure. But anyway, there's food for thought in terms of the sugya. So these shadows do come up all the time. So they're different, but they didn't have different opinions. Again, the safest thing in all these kinds of things is to run a gay with the Chumrah, and both run a gay with the Chumrah, and all these types of situations. Sometimes, unfortunately, just not that long ago, someone was telling me, still an unresolved story about somebody who was a combination of both. That the egg was not Jewish and the birth mother was not Jewish, but she's being raised by a Jewish mother, and she's apparently the family's not so firm, they didn't really have any guidance in this, and they just like assumed there was another parsha somehow, somewhere along the way, someone assumed that everybody was Jewish. She was neither egg was Jewish nor the birth mother was Jewish. So it's not holidays. So anytime you start to hear as Rabbanim, you're going to hear more and more of these things become more and more common. So you have to keep your eyes and ears open for these kinds of scenarios to make sure these are done properly.
Is there a point of the bris or at 13?
We would like to do it at the time of the bris. We'd like to do the, if there's a suffix, whether this child needs a geiris, we'd like to do the meal l'shem geiris. We'd like to do the tefillah l'shem geiris at some point. And then depending on, if you're ready doing Geirus Chumra, that may have ramifications in terms of a girl, whether she can marry a Kohen or not. If you really think that she's a Suffolk Geirus, then she shouldn't be marrying a Kohen. Okay? So we talked about standard Geir Katan, and we talked about a little bit of a quasi Geir Katan. Now let's go back a little bit, and since we spoke a lot about almost the protocol of Geirus, I want to speak a little bit about some of the introductions to Geirus, some of the Geirus-related topics that come up in the process of being a Kabbalah Geir, and then some of the post-Geirus issues that relate to Geirus, some of the things to be aware of after the person has already converted. So in terms of the pre-Geirus, we already saw how important a role Kabbalah Mitzvah plays. Not only does the Kabbalah Mitzvah play a significant role, but the motive for Kabbalah Mitzvah is also very important. So here the Gemara has a whole discussion in Masechet Yevamos, in the second parak, about what motives should be checked out beforehand before we're Kabbalah Geirus. So the Gemara lists off that we should not be Kabbalah Geirus, Lashum Ishus. We should have, if we know that the reason that the person is converting is for marriage purposes, or the person is converting because it's financially lucrative to be a Jewish. The Gemara talks about the days of Shlomo HaMelech, that they don't want to accept Geirim, or the days of Mordechai, they don't want to accept Geirim, even if Rav Mem Eretz Yadim. The Gemara talks about all these kinds of people who join the bandwagon, but their incentive, their motives are not necessarily the purest of pure. The Gemara actually quotes Machlokes HaKanoim about, not only are we not allowed to accept them, but we say Geirus is chal even b'di'evet. So the Gemara quotes one Tana who says that even b'di'evet the Geirus isn't chal. The Gemara says we don't pass them. We pass them lach kulam geirim. We pass them that even if the motives were not done properly, but b'di'evet the Geirus is going to be chal. The reason why the Geirus is going to be chal, so the Ritva writes, is because even though they didn't do it out of the goodness of the heart, but he invokes the principle, it's almost like Kaliyu Bezabin Zvine Zvine. When you force somebody into a sale, so even though they didn't really want to sell it, by the end of the day, they take the money. So at the end of the day, we assume the person was going to be daito, that they're really going to become Jewish. So Lamaisa, we paskin b'di'evet that the Kohen gave him. There were some poskim who questioned whether that applies b'zman hazeh. That would be an unbelievable monkey wrench into the sugya. There was something about Avram has this, Herzog quotes such an idea, that the Ritva seems to say the reason why b'di'evet is good is because even though their motives may not have been pure, but of course they're going to keep mitzvahs, because after all, they're joining our community, so who's going to live in a Jewish community and not keep mitzvahs? So it's understood they're going to keep it, they're going to keep mitzvahs. So these Acharonim write, when that was the reality of a Jewish community. We live in a world where you could be a full-fledged member of the greater Jewish community and not keep a mitzvah at all. So maybe that whole svara that it's built, that's understood, that's called a mitzvah, maybe we have to reevaluate that this man. That would be a big question. But whatever it is, even putting that aside for a moment, the directives from Chazal are clear that you're not supposed to be Makabal Geirim when you think that there are other issues involved. Not only are you not allowed to be Makabal Geirim when you think there are other reasons for it, but you're supposed to check for those other reasons. You're supposed to ask them, you're supposed to investigate, you're not supposed to close your eyes, you're supposed to see whether this person is a good candidate for Geirus or not. There were situations sometimes in Europe that some poskim were makil, when they felt that if we're not going to recover this gear, so there'll be a greater kilkul than there is a tikkun. Normally, the Thomas HaTzibur, we want to stay away from having this gear, we're not genuine. What if there's going to be a big kilkul involved? What could be a big kilkul? So, in the olden days, the Beis of the Gemara, so either you went to the Beis, and you didn't go to the Beis, and now, so Chaim Moiz and other posts can discuss, so they're going to come to the Orthodox rabbi. The Orthodox rabbi is going to turn them away. So what are they going to do? They're going to go to the Reform rabbi. The Reform rabbi is going to convert them anyway. Shaloi kedim legamrei. And they're going to be walking around telling everybody they're Jewish. And everyone's going to think they're Jewish. So that's a big kilkul that the community may have to deal with. So the rabbanim in each time and place have to assess whether, since the whole issur of emakam gemer shalishus is really a lechatchila, not a b'diavad, so you have to assess whether every once in a while maybe it's kedai to look the other way on that. L'tovas hatzibur. Again, that's a very, very fine line. You have to take a look at that. But the starting point that Allah is that you're not supposed to be makabel gerim under these circumstances. When you're makabel gerim,
but
the b'diavad, the gerim is going to be chal. So the question is, sometimes could you argue that there are other mitigating factors that almost permit you to violate this din l'chadchila? So that some rabbanim in Europe had these types of cheshbonos. It was case by case. So they, no, there are rabbanim in America also have these cheshbonos, but I'm saying it's a case by case type of a basis. You have to be a real bona fide basis to be able to make that hashkara. But if you're not a bona fide basis, it shouldn't be makabel gerim anyway. But again, the starting point is a makabel gerim m'shem ishus. Whenever you makabel gerim, so there are almost two, sometimes the contradictory factors that are playing out, just how welcoming and open we should be to the game and how much we should try to be pushing them away. So the Gemara says we have to walk that line. The Gemara actually quotes the pasuk from the Gilas Rus that first Naomi gives Rus and Orpah a whole speech as to convince them why they shouldn't, they really don't want to be Jewish. And they're telling them it's scary to be Jewish. It's bad, and the Gemara don't like us. And you're going to be Chai Mrs. Beis Din, and you're going to have to be buried in Beis HaKvara. So you're going to give you a whole chagad as to why they shouldn't want to become Jewish. And then at the end of the day, the Pasuk says, "Va'tereki misamet v'sil v'techlo d'ber leha." So the Pasuk says, when Naomi saw that Rus was still holding on to dear life, so she stopped giving her the speech. And the Gemara says, from here we learn two halachas. We learn that you're supposed to give a speech, you're supposed to try to dissuade them from coming. But then when you see that they're really, really, really genuine, then you should talk about stop this way, and we should try to open up arms to mekabel them. The Gemara does call Kabbalah's Geirim a mitzvah, so it's a positive thing to be mekabel Geirim. It's a good thing to have Kabbalah's Geiris, but it's not always a good thing, because the Gemara says, the same breath, the Gemara says, it's a mitzvah of mekabel Geirim, in the same breath, the Gemara says, Kashim Geirim Yisrael Kisapachas, the Geirim could be like a scab, like a Neged Saras. So the answer is, Yesh V'yesh. Some Geirim could be good, and some Geirim could not be so good. So that's why you have to be really, really careful. Geiris is not a game. You have to spend a lot of time really genuinely understanding whether the person is sincere or not. When you have a person who's in the process of being a Geir, so there are a couple of halachas that still apply to them. At the end of the day, they're goyim. They're still goyim until they come to the mikvah, until they meal and tefila, so they're considered to be goyim gemurim. So they may start to act like they're Jewish. They may be coming to shul, they may be sitting at a Shabbos table, but at the end of the day, you can't forget that they're still considered to be goyim. So there are some halachas that still govern, even in the process of being makabel gerim. One of them is something we spoke a little bit about before. The famous one that had in it says that a goy should shavas, that a goy is not allowed to keep Shabbos. It's a nisim in a Torah. Merlin Zephim Sukh of Loish Bos, we have a tradition, and that pasuk is teaching us that a goy is not permitted to observe Shabbos. Kozman, that he's not Jewish, he's still a goy. We quoted a machlokes, remember from the Binyan Tzion, a shaila, if you have a goy who already had a meal, did he not have a tefillah? So that's a shaila, whether he's allowed to keep Shabbos or not. But before meal, everybody agrees he's not allowed to keep Shabbos. So you have to remember, when you have someone, if you're makabel, if you're having a ger, you have to make sure that Kozman, that he hasn't had a meal or tefillah, or at least a meal, he's not supposed to be keeping Shabbos. But here we have to also balance. On the one hand, we want him to practice Shmir Shabbos a little bit, so it takes a little time to learn how to keep Shabbos. On the other hand, we don't want him to do such a good job that he keeps Shabbos totally, so we have to make sure to remind him to keep on being Mechal Shabbos. Every week he's got to remember to do, he has to be Machmir to be Mechal Shabbos. I told the story about the electric light, no? Somebody just a couple of months ago asked me what I thought about can we tell the prospective ger he should just turn on the light once on Shabbos, that'll be his chul Shabbos. So it's not so pashut. I said, it depends on what you hold about putting a light in. I said, if it's an incandescent bulb, so then we paskin, that's for sure deraisa, that's havara. But many of our bulbs today are fluorescent bulbs. The fluorescent bulbs are not so pashut, that's a deraisa. it's a gas that's burning, there's a starter that's starting, there's a separation, a lot of lumdus. And then you have the Chazanish and others. The Chazanish says that electricity is always a deraisa. Rav Shlomo Zalman didn't agree to that. A lot of sheet is there. I remember giving it was almost a strange answer. I said, well, the goy could rely on the Chazanish that turning on the light is a deraisa. So it's a deraisa. It didn't sound right, Tapsat, but that's kind of what we
thought. To be over at deraisa?
Yeah, well, Moshe Bosh is a deraisa, so being over there alone is probably not going to do the trick. So there is a Binyan Tzion, isn't that true with the Binyan Tzion that we mentioned before? So the Binyan Tzion has a chiddush. He claims that maybe the definition of what constitutes Chil Shabbos to save the goy from the aveir keeping Shabbos is not the Lametes Melachos. It means we have a big book called Lametes Melachos, right? Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Sinai, brought that right, Rubiat, four volume. We know exactly the Raisas, right? Well, the others that told us, Hol Yom Masech Shabbos. So Goyim, so they don't have that. That's not called Shabbos, man. That's a Melachos. That's not what Chil Shabbos means. You know what Chil Shabbos means? You know, he's got to rest on, he shouldn't be resting on Saturday. He's got to work on Saturday. Work doesn't mean the Lametes Melachos. Work means kind of getting up a sweat, you know, schlepping a couch. That's called work. So the Chlaner writes that if you have a goy that he really, really wants to keep Shabbos, so he doesn't want to do any of the melachos, all the chumras, he doesn't want to violate any sifkat in the mishabu, he won't take any watermelon seeds, nothing, he's every chumra. But he wants to make sure that he doesn't violate his bosu, so let him schlep a couch or something. Let him do something, let him put on his jeans and, you know, schlep some heavy furniture or something. Not out of the air of Khalil. He doesn't want to call Shabbos. Like the, you know, that was the famous joke, you know? About the guy who, everyone knows the joke. No joke. Oh, come on. There was a guy who was in the middle. He was in the middle of trying to be Makayar. And they were telling him that he's got to do malacha. So he says, okay, I do malacha. So he takes something, walks outside on the street. So they said to him, what do you mean? That's not a malacha. There's an Eruv. So the guy says, I don't want to line the Eruv. Okay, so anyway, so the Binyan Tzion says that the definition of malacha for these purposes is just a mala. It's a tarech, you get to work up a sweat. That's considered to be a malacha for these purposes. So that's a big chiddush. That probably depends on the machlekes Rashi and the Rambam. Why is it that the Torah says that a goy can't keep Shabbos? And Rashi writes, because keeping Shabbos is a really dangerous thing. Because you sit around doing nothing, you get into trouble. You don't go to work, so you get into trouble. So for Klal Yisrael, when we don't go to work, so we come to shul, we daven, we learn, we have kids, we have children, you know. Yeah, we keep ourselves out of trouble for the most part. But if you give a guy a day off from work, tell him go on vacation for a day, and he has nothing, he doesn't come to shul to daven, he's not hearing the laning, he's not learning in the afternoon, he doesn't go to pick you up a shiur, so he's just going to get himself into batom. Rashi says the reason why the Torah didn't want the guy and stop to take the day off was not because they didn't want him to mimic Shabbos, is that he didn't want, the Baruch Shalom didn't want it, just not batala with nothing constructive. So the Rambam writes, and it was Malachim, a different part of the Gemara. The Rambam writes, the reason why a goy can't keep Shabbos is because that's a chiddush das, which is mixed up in a religion. There are two religions in the world that are acceptable. One is Tayag Mitzvah, and the other is Shav Mitzvah B'nei Noach. That's it. There is no other accepted Torah version of how to be Oved Hashem. So if a person starts to mix and match, he says that he wants to be a goy, but he'll keep Shabbos on the side. He wants to be a goy, but he'll fast on Yom Kippur. He wants to be a goy, but he'll eat Matzah on Pesach. So the Rambam says, hey, now I do that. That's called Chiddush Das. So the Rambam learns that when the Gemara says that Akam Sheshavas is Asar, it doesn't mean Davka Akam Sheshavas. It means Akam She volunteer to do mitzvahs outside of Shem Mitzvah Zeinayach, that he's not allowed to do. So the Radvaz writes in that Rambam, it means, what does the Rambam mean he's not allowed to do? It means he's not allowed to do if he's doing your Peturis Mitzvah V'yaseh. If the guy says, I think that the Rosh Hashanah wants of me to keep Shem Mitzvah Zeinayach plus Shabbos and Kashrus, that he's not allowed to do. Because the guy says, listen, I know that I'm not Jewish, I only have seven mitzvahs, but as an Eid Mitzvah, I say, I want to volunteer Shabbos, I want to volunteer Kashrus, I want to volunteer other things. So the Radvaz is going, hey, that's not what the Chiddush does. As long as he recognizes that it's Eid Mitzvah, I say, that would be okay. The only thing the Radvaz is not sure about, can he put on tefillin? The Radvaz writes, why can't he put on tefillin? Because tefillin is Dvar Shem Kedusha, so he's going to volunteer to put on tefillin. It's not a bad thing. So he's not sure, could he do that kind of a mitzvah? But if he wants to say Krishma, the guy wants Anuchom, he's going to keep Shem Mitzvah Nach and say Krishma every day. That's okay, you want to believe in one Rebbe Shalom, that's a wonderful thing. If he wants to keep Shabbos, that's okay, as long as he's doing it by any mitzvah via Isa. So that Chiddush of the Binyan Tzion, that Hilcha Shabbos for a goy depends upon working hard, that's more in sync with Rashi's understanding. According to the Rambam, the whole issur is that he shouldn't mimic the Jewish religion, so then if he doesn't do Lametes Melachos, so he's in effect, mimic their religion, he's in effect adding on a new mitzvah that's not really his. So again, that's a shaila. What exactly are the parameters of this din? But the bottom line is that if and when you have a goy who's working with you and trying to be Megayer, so he should be instructed to be Mechal Shabbos each Shabbos. So he should try to do a real Mekoy, try to do a real Malacha, not a suffix, not a Machle. I'm get this car, drive around the block, pull out of the parking spot. I don't do something, let's strike a match. It's hard to find Malachas these days. Just, last Shabbos, Achar Shapesach, we were taking a walk for the kids, and one of the non-Jewish neighbors was they were plowing and they were planting their garden and everything. So I said to my eldest son, Meyakov, I said, if you want to watch Lamata's Malachas, you have to look at a goy on a Saturday afternoon. He said, they mamash know how to do Malacha. The chayr is the rey, a kaitz, and mamash every Malacha under the sun. I said, even Osi Shtebat and Niran, if you look really carefully, maybe they're even weaving the clothes. I said, for Jews, from Jews, what Malacha do we ever do? Seriously, what Malacha do we ever do? Think about it. What Malacha do we do? We drive our cars. And we write. We don't even write anymore. Nobody writes. Nobody. Guys have computers. Nobody writes anymore. We drive our cars. That's it. Well, that's the only malacha that we really, really do. What else do we do?
Bishul.
Bishul? No, who cooks? You throw things in the microwave. Everything's pre-cooked already. Bishul. There's almost no malacha anymore. Don't quote me. Don't misquote me in that.
According to Rashi, would it really be sufficient to drive around the block? That's what going to do all the time. It's still getting in trouble.
Still getting in trouble. Okay, I don't know. Not sure. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, like the Lashma,
what Lashma? Meaning Geiris Lashma.
Yeah.
If, in the standard case, if a Jew and a non-Jew are dating, that automatically, even if the...
That's automatically Shalom Lashma, yeah.
Even if he's like sincere because I want to marry the person.
No, that's called insincere. He's sincere that he wants to marry him, but not sincere that he wants to become Jewish. Again, putting aside some of those extra halachic considerations, that's exactly what the Gemara. One of the questions that you ask the ger is Shema Einecha Nasan Bevas Yisrael. Shema Einecha Nasan Bevachu Yisrael. Those are the questions we're supposed to ask. We don't have to ask the question. He's coming with his non-Jewish girlfriend, with his Jewish girlfriend. We know exactly what the answer is. We're one step ahead of Chazal. We don't even have to bother asking the question. So that's Mamash. Gave us
the
Shem
Ishas. The idea of filling the Dabar Kedusha for a chinuch reason, the guy is the gayer.
Yes, I don't think he should be wearing tefillin until he's Jewish.
Until it happens.
I think so.
And then that's when he starts to learn how to put it on. And how do I...
I don't know.
It takes
a long time to figure it out.
Yeah, like the mechanics, it's hard. So we'll send
him to a Bar Mitzvah lessons. We'll figure out how to put it on. Yeah. Somebody went tell me there was once a fellow who told me there was a little bit of a pickbook. It was a mashu of a pickbook on that. I think his mother's Geirus. So they told him this is Eitz HaTayva. He should just be go to the mikvah again. Whatever. They brought him to the mikvah again. So but he was a real Ben Tayva, a real Yeshiva Bacha. So he said to me, he just wanted to convince me as to how it was mamash as a chumah b'yam. It wasn't a real Geirus. He said to me, I asked the Rav and I got out of the mikvah, should I put tefillin back on this? Now, because I put on tefillin this morning, as a chai, said the Rav said, I don't have to put on tefillin again. So he just thanked me. That wasn't even a suffix in the tefillin. Just a yes, it's the ace of the chazuchim. That was his like the real tam chacham. That was his barometer. It's like the bar mitzvah boy who puts on tefillin before the ace. Okay. Anyway, yeah. Getting back to the story. So some other things that we should be aware of when the person is in the prospect of the process of converting, if he didn't, the guy is not really supposed to be learning Torah. Now, that's a big machlokes. Some people can say that clearly doesn't apply to a process of Geirus. Part of the process of Geirus is to teach him a little bit of Torah. So we assume that whatever's necessary for the purpose of making sure this Geirus is going to fly, to teach him, Modzinus or Mitzvah Kalas, Mitzvah Chamuros, so that we should be doing. So we learn other things. Right? Teach him, he has to know Reb Chaim's now. He can wait for Reb Chaim's after he comes out of the Mikvah. So you have to learn every Mikvah's Chinuch now. So you tell him, Rashi Prakha, whatever's necessary. But more than that, probably shouldn't be done, but that's a real formal violation of teaching Torah to Goy, and one could argue that if it's part of the process of Geirus, then maybe that Yisra doesn't apply. But some folks can write. Some folks can say the Yisra of teaching Torah doesn't apply to Toshav itself, it only applies to Toshav HaPeh. That's a further, those are nuances of those details. Mm-hmm. There's another common shaila that comes up. You have a person who's converting, that's in terms of inviting him for meals. Shabbos meals is not a problem, but Yom Tov meals is a potential problem, because the Gemara says in Beitza that the aim is amenas akum be Yom Tov. You're not supposed to invite a goy to your house for a Yom Tov meal. Why is that? So the Gemara says, Zeri Shem Yavim Bishvilay, because we're afraid that you may come to cook some extra food for him. So you're not allowed to cook for goyim and Yom Tov lachem v'loli akum. So if you, as a gezeira, up to that is, Chazal instituted that you shouldn't invite him to the Yom Tov meal in the first place. Shabbos meal you're not going to be mother shvili and halakha for yourself either. But on Yom Tovur, it's so easy to he'll ask you for a cup of tea at the end of the meal, and you make a cup of tea for him. That'll be a problem. So therefore, Midir Rabbani, you're not supposed to invite him in the first place. That's always a tricky question when it comes to people in the process of geirus. He wants to experience a Pesach Seder, he wants to Roshan, he wants to sit in the Sukkah, he wants to come for a Yom Tov meal. So what do? This year is not there, you should invite him for the first Seder this year. Friday night Yom Tov, you can, because you have a Shabbos also. Somebody just asked me a Shabbos this week. The last week somebody asked me a Shabbos, it wasn't for geirus. They had to invite some, what?
An aid.
What?
An aid for a grandmother.
No, we'll get there. So someone just asked me a Shabbos. I told him, they should invite, if it's a goy, for whatever reason, how to come to the Seder, invite him for the first Seder, rather than the second Seder, because this year, when it's on a Friday night, it'll be okay. So those kinds of cases are probably not called mezamnim. When it's someone who's working in your house, so the post means that's not called mezamnim. Mezamnim means that to invite him as a guest, if let's say I have a babysitter, so I have a ozeret comes to my house every day, so I'm not going to be barber b'shvila, she's my work, she's not sitting at my table, she's going to have to make sure to feed her before I eat myself. That's the din of the kavachatma from my behemoth. A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people don't realize that they sit down and eat the whole meal, and and the person's working in the kitchen and waiting until you're done. So that's not right. The post can point out, it's a Shabbat deraisa. You're not allowed to sit down and eat your meal before you feed your behemoth, kavachal, before you feed your workers. So you have to offer them to eat. If they don't want to eat, then that's okay. You don't have to force them to eat. You have to always offer them to eat before you sit down and eat your any of your meals. Anyway, get back to the story. So to invite someone who's in the process of geirus, the chayr should be a problem. There is a cooler floating around about this. I'll tell you the truth. I don't understand it. It was said in the name of an Olam Gadol. I don't want to say it over because I'm not sure I understand it. And I don't know, you have any insight? You heard of it?
Had the Shabbos Pesach.
Yeah.
You're talking about in the process.
In the process to invite them for Yom Tov meal. So the quote from...
Schwartz.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the cooler? You understand that?
Same one, Talmud Torah. It's in the process.
Yes,
I
didn't understand. Yeah, I've heard this cool has been floating around, but I tell you, I don't understand it. So whatever it is, I can't say more than that. I don't understand that. So now we have our person who finished all the process part. So we made sure all the motors were okay, and he converts and everything is shown nice role. Now what happens if he comes out of the mikveh? Yeah.
How do you understand what Yom Tov is?
So you have to invite him to all the Shabbos Yom Tov meals together. You have to wait for the year when right. Every...
okay. That sounds impractical.
What?
Mock Seder.
I don't know.
You can do a real cleanup if you don't invite him to the Yom Tov meal.
He has to have a Yom Tov meal. Yom Tov meal is still different from a Shabbos meal.
Yeah, they have to know when to say lay shave, they have to know when to make a bracha on maror. Like, there's things that happen at the end of the meal.
I'm not sure.
Does it apply to not from relatives who are
so
not
that's,
actually...
Yes, that's so if you look in the... conventional poskim, so they have that phrase that if someone who's dino ka'akom, so then this issa should apply to. So we're very, very weary to apply that principle, dino ka'akom b'zmanazah. For a variety of reasons, we assume most people think shenishbaz b'zmanazah, shagig, so we're very, very careful before we label somebody as an official...
people who have, bad yichlus, bad geirus, who have married into the family or something.
I mean, the Imam is not Jewish.
Yeah.
I mean, people, the Imam is not Jewish. Yeah. So what I always tell people when they get a very common shayla, I always say, you don't have to extend the invitation to both parties. It means you call up your Jewish cousin and say, we'd love to invite you, B'lashon Yochid, to this. And obviously, the poskim say, if a non-Jew walks into your house and says, no, you're not going to throw them out. Right? You're not going to throw them out. Some have that eitzah also with the geirim that they give almost these general they have these like they announce a week before shul, if anybody needs a Pesach Seder we'd love to have you, and he calls you up and says I'd love to come. Okay, and he invites himself. I didn't invite him. Some have such an eitzah like that. Okay, so we have a person who just became Jewish. Bachshav Malzov. Okay, we're all excited. What's the first thing that's supposed to happen after that? It's a man, it's got front fill whatever. Okay. But what's supposed to happen after that? So very often the first thing that happens after that is that the person gets married. The person doesn't get married because very often they were married beforehand. Now it depends on who's what over here. Sometimes we end up running these garrison for people where we thought the person was Jewish and they really weren't Jewish and they've already been quote unquote married. So So obviously they weren't married yet, so we may have to run a chuppah of a kiddushin the same day. You know, kill two birds with one stone, the whole process right afterwards. Sometimes you have a man and a woman who converted together. They were two goyim who came as a unit to convert. Now they want to remain married. They want to become halachically married. So whatever, anytime you run a chasana immediately after a geirus, so that's always a potential red flag, because that's the sugya of havchana. The Gemara says in the Maseches Yevamos that if a woman was already married, either she was divorced or widowed, so she has to wait 3 months before she can remarry, because you have to make certain that you know who the baby is and make sure that she's not really pregnant. That's the din for the havchana. The Gemara says in Machlekes, whether that's a din derais or din derabanan, but whatever the havchana, the havchid. So that's a real din. That's the real halacha. So in the middle of that sugya of havchana, the Gemara says that same din applies by a ger and a geiris. If two goyim convert together, they should wait 3 months before they actually get married, because the havdil havchin ben zereshin is a bekedusha, zereshin is a shalom bekedusha. There are enough kaminas ladina to know whether this baby was an effective mubershin of geir or not, or whether this baby who's born now is going to be conceived after the Jewishness. You have nafkaminas for Yibum, for Chalitza, for Araya, the potential serious ramifications of this. So he's supposed to wait the 3 months of Avchana as well. The first time, I think I told this over in Yevamos, I'm sure, the first time I ever heard of Avchana, so I was 6 years old. I wasn't passing any Avchana shadows then, but I heard about it, it's a strange story, but I heard about it in a movie. You guys, nobody here is even going to remember this movie. There was a movie called Hester Street. From 20 years before you were born, probably. So Hester Street is a street on the Lower East Side. Maybe you remember. You remember that street? That movie, Hester Street? No, it was that movie. I'm old. It was about this Jewish guy. Like, this frim guy comes from Europe in 1900. He comes, he, like everyone else, he left his wife and his kids behind, any money. He comes to America, and slowly but surely becomes very Americanized. I still remember, over 45 years ago. His name is Yankel, he comes as Yankel, he turns into Jake, you know, whatever. So he becomes very Americanized. Then he brings over his wife 10 years later. So his wife comes, she's still from right out of the shtetl, you know, the kids with Langer Pius, and she can't deal with Jake. And, you know, that's the whole crisis of the movie. And they live on Hester Street and they sell pickles together, whatever it is. And then at the end, they get divorced. So the marriage doesn't work out. So at the end of the movie, like the last scene, they show the get being given. So they're like, I don't know, whatever, last scene, the regular movie. So they show the get being given. So the Rav, is the get. So the Rav turns around to the woman and he says, and now listen to me, you can't get married for another 3 months. And then at the end of the movie, she marries like the Shamus or something, 3 months later. He says, you can't get married for another 3 months. So I remember, like yesterday, I turned around to my father, and Mashallah said to him, why did the rabbi just say it? It's so mean. Why can't she get married for 3 months? So my father said, it's a sugi nyavamas. He said, just to make sure she's not pregnant. So I said, okay. I don't know what if I was talking about. But years later, that was my introduction to Havchana. So the Gemara says in Yevamos, let's say we know that she's not pregnant. She's 95 years old. She is not pregnant. We know that she's not pregnant. The Gemara says, no, it doesn't matter. I feel Yavu Eliyahu V'yayim that she's not pregnant. The Chazal made a takon across the board that even if we know for a fact that she's not pregnant. Therefore, the place came right. Let's say if a woman just got divorced or just a husband died, she wants to marry next month, she'll take a pregnancy test. She'll go to the doctor. They'll tell her she's not pregnant. So no, the place can say, the pregnancy test and the doctors are no better than Eliyahu Navi. Not almost Eliyahu Navi. Doctors almost, not quite. So even Eliyahu Navi is not going to work. So the doctor's not going to work either. So many achrayim write that the medav amamur that was so machmir, the Gemara was so machmir that havchana is a little plug. That's the real havchana of a married woman. The havchana of a geyores is a significantly less of a concern. It's just kedei lahavchin ben zereshin izu bekedusha shlo bekedusha. We know who the father is going to be. It's not a question of determining the father. It's just a question of almost a watered down version of Avchana. So we've got to be the lower level than of Avchana. There are many Achmen who are makil that if Eliyahu Navi would come and tell us that she's not pregnant, we'd let her get married. So the poskim say, if that's true, so the pregnancy tests are as good as Eliyahu Navi. So that's what the minig is. Many, many rabbanim today will permit these geirim to get married, the geirim to get married, mamash on the same day, but she has to take a pregnancy test. So as long as we know for a fact that she's not pregnant, so then we're okay.
Is Beis Din obligated to ask if she's pregnant or if she's
going to be we better know if she's pregnant, because otherwise it's going to affect the Ger Kratim part. Yeah, well, I mean, it depends what the background is. Yeah, if she's a single girl, we hope she's not pregnant. If there's reason to believe she may be pregnant, then she is pregnant. Okay, so So here we have this person. Yeah.
Do you have to do it that day, or do you do it 2 weeks later?
Well, she has to do it whenever.
Before she's married.
Right before she gets married, yeah. 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 What other things we have to know after? So the person already is converted, what other things should we keep in mind? So one thing we should keep in mind is that once you convert it, there's no, you can never back out. There's no such thing as undoing a gerus. The only way of undoing a gerus is by a ger gadol. There's no such entity called undoing a gerus. Sometimes, you know, you see these, like, haka, these articles about a bitul gerut lemafreya. That's bubba mindset. That's not a halachic terminology. What that means is that we found out information that indicates to us that the gerus was never gerus in the first place. That's a whole different ballgame. That's not a bitul gerus lemafreya. I mean, well, it depends on what you call mafreya means. But if the gerus was chal b'shaitos, and the gerus remains kai and liolavot, bitul gerus lemafreya in today's lingo means that it's igloi muslim lemafreya. The dayan wasn't a dayan. There was no chabos hamitzvah. I don't know, whatever problems may have happened along the way, but in terms of if the gerus was really good b'shaita, then it remains good b'yom v'ed. The Gemara says explicitly that once a person becomes Jewish, afilu im nasa v'nezar, even become an ovid v'nezar, you start worship idols again, is still considered to be like Yisrael mumah. The Gemara says the Farish, if you're makadosh and isha, so the condition is still chal. You can't back out. Once you're Jewish, you're always considered to be Jewish. There is there are some nuances of halachas that the particulars of these halachas are not too relevant for us bizman hazeh, but the principle behind it is very relevant. That's the Gemara in Yevamos and in the Sanhedrin about the arayos that apply to gerim after they convert. So the din is b'deraisa, gersh is kai kunchin of the dummy. That minatur he can marry whoever he wants, he can marry his sister, his mother. He's not related up even to anybody. So let's say if you have a non-Jewish mother, non-Jewish son convert together, in theory they can marry each other, but with the Rabbanon they're not permitted to do so. And one of the reasons why they're not permitted to do so is that it would be a big chil Hashem for people to say that when they were goyim they were very moral and ethical, and now they become Jewish, now they do all kind of ta'evas. So anyone who was not allowed to get married as part of the Shem Mitzvah Noach cannot get married as a Jew either, even though Midaraisa they're not really considered to be connected. So again, as bad as that, obviously that's not going to really happen, those kinds of things. But the principle is an important principle. The Chazal were very sensitive to what the outside world thinks of us. A person converts, so they should be considered by the outsiders as going up in Kedusha, not living a less spiritual, less holy life. It's for this reason that the Post can point out that the relationship that a ger is supposed to maintain with his non-Jewish relatives is supposed to reflect this theme of Shlayomu Bar Mikdishchum Lishikala. That's what Moshe Feinstein writes in his Tshuvas in terms of the mitzvah of Kibud Av Aim that a ger has towards his non-Jewish parents, or even in theory if they converted, they're also not really connected to one another. So Midaraisa, he's not bound by Kibud Av Aim anymore, but he has to act to them in the same way they're going to treat the parents, whatever those standards are. So Moshe had has a Tshuva about those, a particular Gioreth, who was her non-Jewish mother, asked her to come back to the house and stay with her for a few months because she wasn't well. So Moshe writes that whatever is considered to be the norm in the non-Jewish world, if the non-Jews consider that to be a normal child responsibility, for you to turn around and tell your mother, sorry, I don't have to come to you because I'm a Gersh, I've got a Shanola dummy, that's a Bichel Hashem, that'll be Shalayom, but with Yishkamu, with Yishakala. That also governs other types of relationships. Let's say there's also common shilas. How would a ger deal with his non-Jewish relatives in terms of weddings? You know, would it be appropriate for the non-Jewish parents to walk the ger down the aisle? So one could also raise that same concern that in the non-Jewish world, that's considered to be a proper sign of respect to the parents to offer them that kavod. And the guy's going to say, no, I'm not offering you because you're a goyim. So that's also going to touch it. Also going to lead to a chil Hashem. So you have to be careful in all these kinds of interrelationships with the non-Jewish past, that it shouldn't lead to any type of a chil Hashem.
Is it equally applicable to some of the non-Jewish father? A Jew who's a non-Jewish father? So.
Yeah, you know, again, the actual halacha doesn't, but the principle of chil Hashem is clearly there. So yeah, of course the person should act in a covetical way that it shouldn't lead to a chil Hashem. Yeah,
it would be in the same...
You know, again, you know, the formal takana sachamim was not to marry, you know, your previous sister. So that was the formal takana. And the later poskim extrapolated it. Underlying principle guides us. This Torah principle guides us in all of these endeavors. So the same would be true. Whatever that, it's all rooted in chil Hashem ultimately. That people shouldn't think low of this.
Are there any issues between Gerim and their
One could argue that perhaps not. This is part of a general question about how much do those different Isurim or Chibur V'Nishu, those kinds of things, how much do they emanate from the pure biology? How much do they emanate from the Ein Sahara, the lack thereof? It's almost a global kind of a question about that. Those who are a little bit more makel of those kinds of shahs in general would probably be more makel of those. Those who are machma, those would probably be more machma.
In our shul, we give the yamud to Gayrin, whose parent, non-Jewish parent, died on the yurt site. That's the way we do it there. So I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, there's no formal avail. You know, I don't know. Again, I don't know what sure whatever Rabbanim instituted that for whatever reason they did. But in terms of formal availus, there's no real formal availus for non-Jewish parents. I would say that the same kind of a thing, that if in the non-Jewish world it's considered to be appropriate to go, you know, spend a day or two, you know, with the family and not go running around, you know, so then they should follow whatever those guidelines. It shouldn't be that, you shouldn't do something that's less than the standards of what the non-Jewish world of Kibbutz were all about, whatever that means. One very, very last important.
Sorry, just one more quick question. Are Gerim typically told these halachos about their status in Jewish society, or do we kind of tell them about Jewish society in general? And
yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the problem
is. A Gioris once came up to me and said that she was afraid that they were going to be mevatel her Gioris lamafreya because she no longer covered her hair. Otherwise, she was generally from. She was legitimately afraid that they were going to be mevatel her Gioris lamafreya. I'm not sure what
you know in terms of that what is told.
I mean, I know that's a particular
I don't know. There's a very, very important mitzvah that we should really people who are not Gerim have to remember. That's the Haftarah Sagir. That's the mitzvah that speaks to all of Klal Yisrael. So in addition to the mitzvah of the Haftarah Kamocha, so it's how many times? 30 plus times the Torah speaks about the significance of the Haftarah Sagir. It's such a basic, such a fundamental mitzvah of Torah. So we should really take that with the utmost seriousness, to treat the Gerim with the most respect and the most sensitivity, and realize like anybody else who they're mamish part of Klal Yisrael or the whole davar, and mishpadecha yilechem lager garitchem, and we have to encourage them and mechazik them as much as we possibly can. Unfortunately, this mitzvah of Haftarah Sagir has been misused and been abused, like many other mitzvahs have been in certain circles. And in the name of Avos Hagar, so some rather bizarre things have been stated. So there's almost like a circular reasoning that, well, we're going to accept certain people who, well, maybe they're not, the Gerus isn't really Gerus in the spirit of the Haftarah Sagir, because we so love Gerim, so we're going to, so what do we do? So I've heard from prominent Rabbanim who've said we have some people have changed the mitzvah Haftarah Sagir to a Snei Sim Sagir. Namely, they've caused people the most aggravation in the world because they convert them, knowing full well that their Gerus is very shaky, knowing full well that 3/4 of the Jewish community is not going to accept them, and they mamash mislead them. And then they turn around 10 years later and start yelling at the Rabbanim, who they knew all along didn't accept the Gerus, and they start yelling at the Rabbanim and saying, you people are in violation of Haftarah Sagir. We're by the Shavuos again. You're the ones who didn't. You didn't avla to the person. You went in and converted a person, and you knew that mainstream of Orthodoxy doesn't accept them. That's our bitl of Haftarah Sagir. You're the ones who acted shalai kedin. So again, I'm not getting involved in the politics right now, but when you hear that word of Haftarah Sagir, so just make sure that it's the Rebbe Shalom speaking of Haftarah Sagir, not somebody who has some kind of agenda who likes to invoke the Haftarah Sagir for their own to push their own policies. So the Haftarah Sagir is a very, very important mitzvah. 100% we're all for that mitzvah, but it has to be done in the proper spirit. Again, Gerus is a very, very sensitive area of halacha. I think we can conclude with probably the way we started, whether we start this way or not, it doesn't matter, but we're going to conclude this way, is that, I used to always give the mashal. When I speak about Gerus, I always give the mashal. So a person has a cold, call up a regular doctor, you know. Is the doctor have to be, you know, the world's greatest specialist, you know, a trained 15 years after Harvard, and I love Dafka. If he knows how to do a strep test, so, you know, anyone stick a thing down your throat, that you have strep or not, and not the greatest chokhmah. Person, chalila v'chalila, needs open heart surgery, so you don't go to some guy who, you know, just playing around a little bit, you know, getting his hands, you know, feet wet in high school biology. So you go to a guy who's been doing, he knows what he's doing. He trained with the best. He's the biggest mumcha in this field. When serious areas, go to serious experts. So we're not minimizing any areas of halacha. All areas of halacha are important. But, you know, between you and me, shh, if you get it wrong in the Yalav Yavu Shaila, so it's the worst Chodesh B'dievet. You know, whatever, what do you mess up with that? I don't know if I mentioned about, I told the story about that rabbi with the marriage and the funerals. Oh, that's a good story. Okay. So when I was rubbing for Ramis, so there was somebody came to me not from one part of Shul B'chlau. Somebody in the family died, and they wanted me to run the funeral for them. The guy starts to tell me, you know, it's in a mausoleum, it's this, it's that. I don't really do those kinds of things. But there was a rabbi from another denomination who I knew would, probably be more than willing to do it for him. So I gave him this other rabbi's number. I said, listen, you know, he'll take care of it, whatever. Okay. I didn't think it was Maseh Deobre Aveira, that we didn't do it anyways. So this rabbi was, although he was from a different denomination, he still had his heart a little bit. And he had probably learned in yeshiva, he probably had a little heart with us a little bit. So I was schmoozing him afterwards. So he said to me, you know, I just want you to know that I really don't like to do Masada Kedushin, he said, because, you know, I know I'm not an Orthodox rabbi. I know that people aren't going to accept my marriage. He said, but, you know, funerals I do. So he said to me, what's the difference? He said, but my marriage, I don't want someone to question 20 years from now with a couple of marriages, I'm not married. He said, but the funeral, he said, Rizelosh, but the Yevet, the guy's dead anyway. That's what he said. So he said, so but the Yevet, Yalav Yevet, Shchodesh happens anyway. But Geirus, if you mess up in Geirus, then you're messing up in David Geirus. So don't mess up in Geirus. If you don't know what you're doing, if you're not qualified, don't get involved. Okay, whichever lot of Akbar, or you learn, you know, you're among us, and keep on doing the good work for Christ. Well, doing a bit of Sakedesh, the Kedusha Matar, and following the proper Messiah, and getting Hadracha in the right way to deal with these very big things.
Maybe we'll have Milchan here.
Any scheduling things in terms of review when
they